A very good Friday. Welcome to this edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Coming up in the show here today, we'll bring you feature agricultural news reports, and then we'll check in with national and regional agricultural news headlines as well. And we get started with regional agricultural news right after this.
Unsure of your naval orange worm program? No worries now with Rango, a proven solution to protect your orchard at hull split from naval orange worm. Rango is an OMRI-listed broad-spectrum biopesticide with no known resistance, making it an excellent rotation and tank mix partner for both conventional and organic growers. Partner with Rango today. Contact your PCA, local dealer, or visit rangonow.com. Rango, no worries now.
The Colorado Department of Food and Agriculture Secretary Karen Ross joined California Natural Resources Agency Secretary Wade Crowfoot and other dignitaries at Stemple Creek Ranch in Marin County recently to reaffirm shared priorities between the state and private stakeholders, and also to highlight an updated draft 2022 scoping plan that lays out how California can drastically reduce its dependence on fossil fuels while relying on natural and working lands as essential pieces to help achieve climate goals. The Stemple Creek Ranch managers have utilized multiple state funding programs, including CDFA's Healthy Soils Program and the Department of Conservation's Working Lands and Riparian Corridors Program and a California Farmland Conservancy Program. The funding is helping to protect the ranch from future development through a conservation easement, which is helping to improve the quality of the soil as well as livestock forage and is helping to restore a stream. All those actions are reducing or avoiding greenhouse gas emissions and improving the environment. Secretary Ross said the ranch is a prime example of a working ranch with multiple benefits for producing nutritious food, providing wildlife habitat, and improving water quality, all while sequestering carbon and providing climate change resiliency. And according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture National Agricultural Statistics Service, the initial subjective forecast for the 2022 California almond production is 2.80 billion pounds. Forecasted production is 4% below last year's production of 2.92 billion pounds. Forecasted bearing acreage for 2022 is a record high of 1,370,000. Forecasted yield is 2,040 pounds an acre, 8% lower than a 2021 yield of 2,210 pounds an acre. The subjective production forecast is based on a survey conducted from April 19th to May 6th from a sample of 500 almond growers. Respondents had the option of reporting their data by mail, online, or phone. Similar to last year, the 2022 almond crop experienced a mostly dry winter throughout the state. Although there were a few scattered storms, snowpack and water levels will continue to be well below normal. The almond bloom began in early February with favorable weather for pollution. Warm temperatures encouraged a shorter bloom period than has occurred in recent years. The north region, with an earlier bloom in the central and south regions, was hit the hardest by a freeze that occurred during the last week in February. Frost damage was observed, with reports that some acres would be left unharvested without an adequate net set. In addition to variability in expected yields across regions, the impact of the freeze appears to differ by variety, as late blooming varieties were reported to have fared better than the early blooming varieties. Excellent weather in April helped the crop develop, with a few instances of spring rain bringing some relief to areas impacted by drought conditions. The lack of water continues to be a top concern for almond growers. Despite record high bearing acreage, the 2022 crop is not expected to be as large as the past 2 years. The Rodale Institute California Organic Center recently started a new research project. It's called Replacing Plastic Mulch with Cover Crops in Organic Vegetable Production Systems for Economic Benefit, Soil Health, and Environmental Stewardship. It is supported by the California Department of Food and Agriculture in a grant that was awarded in January. The study will examine cover crops and living mulches as a replacement for plastic mulch in organic strawberry and artichoke production. As demand for organic fruits and vegetables continues to increase on the local and national level, more acres in California will transition to organic agriculture. Thus, the use of plastic mulches in vegetable production systems will increase, according to Dr. Ariana Bazzolo, research director of the California California Organic Center. She says extensive use of plastic mulches in food production systems has created massive concerns about the long-term sustainability of using this input. It is critical to find more effective yet environmentally friendly alternatives to plastic mulches to facilitate weed management in organic and conventional production systems. In this project, they are proposing a novel approach that relies on using living mulches and cover crops as an alternative to plastic mulch in organic production systems. Bozzola explains using cover crops and living mulches will also eliminate the need for frequent soil tilling, thus allowing vegetable producers to adopt no-till and minimum tillage systems, which will further enhance sustainability in these production systems. The research project will span 3 years and take place in Camarillo, California, on McGrath Family Farm, where the Rodale, California Organic Center is located. In late March, Bozzola and her team kick things off by seeding the strawberry cover crop, a mix of sorghum and buckwheat, which will be terminated in a few months with a roller crimper. The strawberries will then be transplanted directly into the cover crop residue and intercropped with clover, which will serve as a living ground cover. Bozzola and her team will conduct multiple replicated trials over the three-year period and will assess how cover crops, living mulches, and no-till reduced tillage affect strawberry and artichoke growth, yield, and quality, irrigation water use, and weed suppression. On the heels of a global pandemic, much has changed over the past 2 years in a world of grocery retailing, and these changes may influence what lies ahead for the entire fresh produce industry. To discuss the future of grocery retail and its impact on fresh produce, a pair of leaders from Whole Foods, along with its former co-CEO, have been confirmed as panelists for a keynote presentation this July at Organic Produce Summit 2022 in Monterey, California. The engaging conversation called The Future of Grocery Retailing will be moderated by Walter Robb, principal of Stonewall Robb Advisors, senior executive partner at S2G Ventures, and former co-CEO of Whole Foods. Joining the conversation will be Karen Christensen, senior vice president of merchandising for perishables for Whole Foods, and Madhavi Reese, Whole Foods' vice president of marketing. Featuring candid commentary, this insightful and informative discussion between a trio of respected industry leaders will explore how Whole Foods is addressing supply chain issues, the role of technology in e-commerce, consumer shopping behavior, new formats, and innovations in grocery retailing. The event will take place July 13th and 14th at the Monterey Conference Center. For more information, go to organicproducesummit.com. Zespri's first ever charter vessel to the U.S. arrived in the port of Los Angeles on May 9th, delivering SunGold kiwi fruit to meet growing consumer demand. The shipment kicks off another anticipated season as more consumers look for delicious and nutritious options to add to their basket. Zespri's integrated consumer campaign is designed to communicate the benefits of SunGold and drive traffic to retailers carrying the brand. To drive brand awareness and purchases, Zespri's Go Sweet, Go Bold consumer campaign includes digital media, social media, and influencer marketing, along with mass sampling efforts at major events. The campaign encourages shoppers to break from the mundane and shake up the contents of their fruit bowl with SunGold kiwi fruit. Zespri is using high-reach digital channels, including Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, and YouTube. And to entice shoppers to buy in-store, Zespri's new shipper displays feature bright, eye-catching graphics highlighting the sweet taste and nutrition messages from the integrated campaign.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
The Nichols Soil Lab near Arbuckle, California in Colusa County is a privately owned research farm operating with a memorandum of understanding with UCANR to coordinate tree crop research. Last week, the facility had its annual field day where it presented different research projects that were taking place in the orchards. One of these projects was looking into research involving developing machine learning-based approaches for predicting water stress and irrigation optimization for almond orchards, using satellite imagery and drone to predict stem water potential. UC Davis master's student Peter Savchik and UC Davis's Isaiah Kaseka are leading this research at the facility.
The UAV imagery that I've been using is captured with a drone over the orchard, and it's what I use is called multispectral data, which is basically the reflectance of specific wavelengths of light in the 400 to 900 nanometer range that have essentially in recent years been demonstrated to correlate with stem water potential vegetative growth and other plant parameters. And if you look through research, you will see that this multispectral data is really rising in a lot of different plant science, not just almonds, but also in vineyards especially. So basically what I've done is, over the past growing season, I collected a bunch of data, maybe on 20 different dates, where I would go through the orchard and collect stem water potential, and also soil moisture. And then using these databases that we have subscriptions to, I also obtained some environmental data, like relative humidity and just air temperature, basic stuff. And then also estimated ET, which we obtained through an online service called EraWatch. So then, using all of those true stem water potential values and all the other data, I kind of trained this model to predict stem water potential based on other data, like soil moisture and also the reflectances that this drone measures. And I had pretty good results. Basically, between the predicted and the observed stem water potential values, we had an R-squared value of 0.91, which is like really good, almost a little too good, makes some people in academia a little suspicious, but I think it's a good sign and a good start.
Savchik said the next steps for this mapping research are to map more areas of the orchards at the Nicholas Soil Lab for almonds and see where the variability is occurring, and compare the predicted values to the actual ground values to measure the accuracy of the program.
We've trained the model with values that we've taken throughout the orchard, but what we haven't done is taken, say, you know, the stress is 9.7 here, and then gone to that point and measured the stress and see how they compare. So that's what we really need to do.
After the comparisons between the stem water potential predictions from the program and the actual ground values, Savchik said that the program will be used to make irrigation scheduling decisions to see how water use efficiency is affected and, of course, yield at the end of the season. Additionally, Savchik and Kaseka are working on other irrigation technology-related projects at Nichols.
Here we have these sensors applied to maybe 6 trees throughout the orchard, and they're from a company called Saturis. And it's a new experimental kind of sensor that is supposed to predict stem water, or not predict, but measure stem water potential, and they're hoping for it to be an alternative to the pressure bomb, although I think it's still on the rise and still needs more validation. So that's what we're doing here, is while I'm collecting all these values for this other project, we're also validating the pressure bomb values against the Satura sensors to see how they compare. And we also have soil moisture sensors in the ground, which is this other sensor you can see. So we have a lot of different data that we're just obtaining from everywhere in the orchard, and kind of the overarching goal of our research is to figure out how we can take all this data that's kind of fractured and disjointed and bring it together into a whole system where everything is fully integrated and can give you an automated prediction of basically when to irrigate, and you know, can do so while also considering the spatial variability of the orchard. And also to kind of test these different irrigation making decisions, we have a special like alternative drip line installed in this orchard. So Stan has his regular drip line that he irrigates when we're not doing experimental stuff. But then we also have in each row special drip lines installed where we can divide each row into 4 different blocks, so we can irrigate based on different parameters. So we can do half the row, we irrigate based on when the soil moisture reaches a certain threshold of dryness, and then the other half we irrigate based on when the stem water potential reaches a certain level. So we're also trying to do some experiments with that and see what irrigating based on different feedback data, what that effect is on water use efficiency and also yield. And then in order to apply those treatments, we've installed these controllers in each row. They have a little Arduino inside them, and basically they allow you to connect to 4 different solenoids at once, so you can control remotely 4 different solenoid valves. So we have one of these in each row where we can, you know, there's a little online portal that links all of these, so we can tell each different solenoid valve to irrigate a different amount based on the amount of stress we observed in that block of the row. So it allows us to do some pretty interesting things, to see the effects of different types of irrigation making decisions.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
In national agricultural news, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission will hold its inaugural voluntary carbon markets meeting on June 2nd. Participants will discuss issues related to the supply and demand for high-quality offsets, including the product standardization and data necessary to support the integrity of carbon offsets as greenhouse gas emissions avoidance and reduction claims. They'll also discuss issues that relate to the market structure for trading carbon offsets and carbon derivatives, as well as what potential challenges and opportunities in these markets may look like. As companies increasingly turn to derivatives markets to manage risk and keep pace with global efforts to decarbonize, CFTC Chair Rostin Benham says he looks forward to CFTC facilitating these discussions. He also says the goal is to foster innovation and crafting solutions to the climate crisis while ensuring integrity and customer protection. He says they'll also be gathering information from a variety of market participants in the voluntary carbon markets. U.S. exporters are invited to submit applications to the USDA for an agricultural trade mission to the Philippines July 18th through the 21st. The mission to Manila will allow U.S. growers, producers, and exporters to explore a thriving market that is expected to emerge from COVID-19 with one of the strongest growth forecasts in Asia. The Philippines is the eighth largest export market for American agricultural and food exports, averaging $3.1 billion annually during the last 5 years. USDA says the country offers tremendous export potential thanks to its young and fast-growing population, strong consumer preference for American foods and beverages, and robust service-based economy. The Philippines sets itself apart from the rest of the world with a U.S. partnership that spans decades and has a bright trade future, according to Daniel Whitley, administrator of USDA's Foreign Agricultural Service. An American Farm Bureau Federation official says the U.S. and China want to reduce or drop Trump-era tariffs on a range of goods, possibly including farm goods, but the deal is not in a bag yet. AFBF Senior Director of Congressional Relations Dave Samuelson says both sides have signaled an interest in reducing the tariffs, but there's still a big question that must be answered first.
We'll then, of course, question the Chinese, reciprocate, and then reduce or eliminate some of the tariffs that they put on in retaliation for when the U.S. put tariffs on all those Chinese imports back in 2018.
As for agriculture?
These Chinese retaliatory tariffs affected agriculture. And of course, we all saw the big downturn in sales to China in 2018 and 2019. They since have granted waivers, and so our exports to China came back. But the tariff regime still exists, meaning they could put some of these high tariffs back on U.S. products anytime.
And while the phase one China deal helped, China did not grant waivers to some ag products like ethanol and distillers' dry grains. On balance, though, Samuelson says things have improved.
And of course, now our exports have rebounded. Last year, we exported over $35 billion to China in agricultural products. So it still hangs out there. Trade is happening, but we're all in favor of trying to get out from under this tariff regime.
President Biden sees that as a way to reduce inflation, and his administration will consider public input from those hurt or helped by the tariffs and make a decision in the coming weeks. The U.S. tariffs on everything from steel and diapers to furniture and solar panels will start to expire in July. Shoppers are continuing to see rising prices for most foods at the grocery store. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
Food price inflation does not seem to be cooling off. The latest consumer price index showing that during April, grocery store food prices increased by 1.3%. And so,
between April of 2021 and April of 2022, prices increased by 10.8%.
Biggest year-to-year increase in food prices since April of 1981, 41 years ago. Matt McLaughlin tracks food prices for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Up to now, beef, he says, those prices have led the parade of food price hikes. But Matt says during April, eggs registered the biggest monthly increase, the CPI soaring 10% just during April.
This puts it at 22.6% above where it was a year ago.
Poultry product prices, chicken and turkey and such, those went up 3% last month, taking them more than 15% higher than April of last year. One somewhat encouraging point in all this, during March, no food products went down in price, but during April, there were small price drops.
For fresh vegetables and sugars and sweets, as well as for beef and veal.
This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The volatility of oil prices continues, and many are concerned about the possibility of another round of sanctions against Russia and what that could do to the oil market internationally. While gasoline prices are high, it's the diesel prices that have left many with sticker shock. Patrick DeHaan with Gas Buddy says diesel inventories are at their lowest level in decades, and on top of that, global demand is high.
It's the fuel of much of the U.S. economy, semi-trucks, trains, a lot of different construction equipment. And diesel inventories have been falling. Not only that, but because of the EU's stance on Russian oil already, we've seen shortages of diesel in Europe, in which much of the product or some of the product produced into diesel has been moving its way easterly to the European Union. And that has kept prices for diesel very high in the U.S. As we continue to see that imbalance persist, I do not expect any improvement in diesel prices.
And concerns are mounting that the U.S. East Coast could begin seeing diesel shortages soon.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
As buyers and consumers increasingly demand products produced in a more sustainable manner, many companies are looking at less impactful ways to handle waste. Several have turned to BioFiltro, a Davis-based company that offers a proprietary system using worms to help remove nutrients from wastewater. This allows customers, such as food processors, wineries, and dairies, to recycle the treated water in their facilities or for irrigation. BioFiltro's Chief of Sustainability, May Ann Healy, pointed to their biggest installation so far, O'Neill Vintners and Distillers near Parlier in 2020. She said this was an example of a company seeking a better treatment approach. O'Neill, which is ranked as the seventh largest winery in California, enlisted worms to treat more than 1 million gallons of wastewater a day.
I think there, you know, BioFiltro in of itself is a kind of a Swiss Army knife in the sense of, while yes, the core solution offering or value proposition that we provide to wineries is wastewater treatment, we are at the same point converting a waste stream into, you know, water that is reusable for irrigation, as well as converting the nutrients from that we take out of the processed water and converting them into worm castings or vermicompost, basically a microbial rich soil amendment that's really beneficial to water retention, soil health, root structure, et cetera. And, you know, whether or not the winery actually uses that, that's a major sustainability talking point, differentiator factor. You know, now in this day and age, it's not if you're sustainable, it's how you're sustainable. Consumers are asking, you know, how can you, the company, do better? They're voting with their dollars. Anyone that can kind of promote and step out in the forefront for being the pioneers and making really everything, I think, zero waste is, you know, has a competitive edge.
Typically, wineries and food processors apply their wastewater to nearby fields, often called spray fields. Healy said BioFiltro still applies the wastewater, but it's over a worm farm. The wiggly workers, along with beneficial microbes, help digest and remove the nutrients in the wastewater.
So the most like conventional wastewater method in the United States is, yes, what's called land application, or you just spread water over a wide amount of area, and that of land area. And that land area is determined by how many gallons per day you're discharging, and also how many pounds per day of nutrients you're discharging. What we do essentially is our customers still discharge, you know, water across an area, but instead of it being normal land, it's over a worm bed. And so what we do is we design and build these worm farms, you know, or containment basins. And depending on the size of the discharge or the customer, it can be housed in a shipping container, and like a 20-foot shipping container, a small steel tank, or built out to a larger installation. But what it is from top to bottom are layers of wood chips, a layer of crushed rock, geotextiles, and drainage cells. And then there's an irrigation system that's sitting on the top of the wood sheathing. And when biofiltro starts up a system, what we do is we introduce a lot of worms and microbes into the wood shaving layer. And so the feedstock, or how we feed our animals, essentially, is with the winery's process water. So that winery water is spread across the top of this worm farm. It percolates down through all those medias. And at the bottom, there's a sloped floor that the water, you know, flows out through and can then be collected in a, you know, storage tank or sent directly for irrigation or reuse. And as the water is percolating down through the shavings and wood chips, what's happening is the worms are eating the larger solids. And as they digest and excrete, their castings or their excrement is actually really rich in the microbes. And it's those microbes that then go on to form something that's called a biofilm. And that's really the digestive power that you want to establish in any wastewater treatment, because it's those microbes that then work away digesting and removing a lot of the really small contaminants from the wastewater.
Although the worms are fairly hardy, Healy said the processing facility still must adjust the pH of their effluent to between 6 and 9. A pH of 7 is considered neutral, and anything below that is acidic.
We do have an influent pH range. We ask for 6 to 9. Influent, which is actually pretty common and standard, because most wineries, regardless of what wastewater treatment system they use, do have to pH adjust in order to put it on the land. Because if you apply acidic water to land over time, that can really degrade the soil.
Because the biofiltro systems are based on living organisms, you can't just flip the switch to start them up. Healy said it takes a couple of weeks to get the worm population built up. They also use something akin to a starter in sourdough bread, bringing in worms from a similar facility that's already up and running.
So when we turn on a system, we aim to turn it on a couple of weeks before harvest. But what we're also doing is when we seed the worm population, we seed it with a pretty good starter population per se. And they are going to be worms that are conditioned already to winery wastewater or process water. So essentially, we start your system with a trained army, you know, or team, a group of employees who already kind of know what they're getting into. And then, like, a fun fact is worms actually live anywhere from 6 to 8 years. So they bring a lot of knowledge with them, per se. It's not like they're fresh out of college and just learning how to work.
One of the nice things about worms is they're fairly self-regulating. When food is plentiful, like during wine grape harvest, Healy said the worms have lots of energy and will reproduce. But during the off season, when the winery waste may be only 10% of peak, the worms go into a kind of a holding pattern.
And I think that's the beauty of our system, is it's nature-based, and, you know, Mother Nature self-regulates. So ultimately, when there's a lot of food coming down the drain, the worms are going to be happy. And so they have energy, you know, excess energy where they can procreate. But when, like at wineries, for example, during harvest, you're going to have a lot of food coming down the drain. So a lot of procreation during harvest. But in the off season, wineries, their daily volume that they discharge, you know, drastically changes. They're what we refer to as the seasonal processor, because there can be some months when they'll only discharge, you know, 10% of their daily discharge volume in comparison to harvest. And so the worms in those months just won't reproduce. They will just focus on, you know, eating and self-regulating. And what's also kind of cool is that worms lay cocoons, and the cocoons can also kind of hang out. So within a cocoon, there's 4 to 6 worms. And those worms will basically stay in that cocoon until they sense that there's enough food for their population or their future to be sustained.
The worm beds typically can treat water in 4 hours, but the actual amount of treated water coming out depends on the upstream flow. Healy said the system is automated with sensors to control flow. For standard users, Biofiltro targets an 85% removal rate for BOD. BOD, or biological oxygen demand, refers to the organic matter in the wastewater. But Healy said the company can engineer systems to remove up to 95%.
What we do is we do a continuous batch process, but each batch takes about 4 hours, and we start each batch. There's a timer that's set up to start it once every 30 minutes, but of course we have ultrasonic sensors that are measuring water upstream of us that can essentially say, okay, if there's a lot of water, it'll start the batch immediately. If there's not a lot of water, it'll skip a batch. But to answer your question succinctly is our entire treatment process is 4 hours. And within that 4 hours, we remove, you know, at least 85 to 90% of BOD. And we can also design it in a way where we can guarantee like higher than 95% as well.
At the heart of their system are California redworms, also known as composting worms. These are not the same as the earthworms found in gardens that don't have the same appetite. Many homeowners may compost their food waste, but Healy said the BioFiltro systems differ in a number of ways. First, they handle wastewater rather than the solid organic matter thrown into the home compost pile. Plus, the industrial facilities may run around the clock during the busy season, and a treatment system must be able to handle a steady stream of wastewater.
These are composting worms at the end of the day. So they're Echinacea fastidia. The earthworms that you find in your yard, they aren't as geared up towards composting, whereas California redworm, that's the species that you hear of and what people buy, that one of the Echinacea andrae, when they want to, you know, vermicompost at home. These guys are hungry. That's what they're here to do, essentially, is break down and digest waste. So they're common, but they're not the same as an earthworm. I vermicompost all of our scraps from my kitchen, and I can tell you it's been a roller coaster of a ride, and I'm sometimes embarrassed because I'm like, I should be good at this. But no, what's different with BioFiltro is it's a patented process. We have 30 years of doing this, but also a very distinct difference in between someone saying, oh, I can vermicompost my solid waste, which is what people do when they take their kitchen scraps or, you know, their solids, is we're doing something called vermifiltration. And no one else has done vermifiltration at the scale that we do. The difference there is, you know, multiple things are happening. When you compost your solids, you choose what arrives to this pile of worms. Whereas in vermifiltration, it's, you know, we are installing ultimately a wastewater system at the end of a pipe from a user who every single day is changing what they, you know, process, changing how they process it. The gallons per day can change. And as they installed us for their business, it's not like we can turn around and say, oh, not today. You know, so we have all these controls, sensors, monitors in place in the actual operation of it. And then, of course, during the design stage, we take all these variations into consideration when we design the system so that we know and can ensure at all times we maintain a pretty optimum environment and living condition for the worms and microbes.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.